Welcome to today's sermon. I'm Mike Adams with Abundance.Church, and today we're going to draw parallels between the coming fall of Western civilization in our modern world versus the repeated rise and fall of ancient Hebrew kingdoms as described in the book of Judges. Yes, Judges, I know. It's going to be a little bit gruesome here, but we'll begin at the very end of Judges. The very last verse actually sort of summarizes the situation, both in the Old Testament as well as where we are today with America and Western civilization. It's found in Judges chapter 21. It's the last chapter, verse 25. It says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." And you might translate that into everyone did what was wrong, because it was right in his own eyes, but it was from a selfish point of view, so it was wrong for the betterment of society. But if you look at that quote, it says, "In those days there was no king in Israel." What that means is that there was no rule of law. Rationality was collapsing in this time. The rule of law had collapsed. The Israelites, who were supposed to be the selected ones, selected by God to rise up and be better human beings, instead they began to resemble the Canaanites. And in that, they wrote their own laws and followed man's law instead of God's law, and they became obsessed with greed and selfishness, violence, fornication, rape, conquering, all the things that define evil in human civilizations. And as revealed in the book of Judges, each civilization rose and then fell as it turned away from God. So we're talking about this cycle of the rise of new, young, you could call it nations or cities or civilizations. In this case, it was ancient Israelite kingdoms with their own judges, who were actually really, I suppose, chieftains or warlords in some cases. The term judge doesn't mean they were associated with a court. They were the rulers. They were the sort of the fiefdom mini kings, or sometimes they were called kings. And they were in charge of their little kingdoms. And one by one, they turned away from God. They abandoned rationality and the rule of law. Importantly, they also turned to sexual perversion, sodomy, things that we would consider today to be LGBT themes, mass rape, and other things along those lines. And then, one by one, they were destroyed. They were destroyed because they turned from God and they forgot about God's laws. And then, of course, after the destruction, the surviving people, they repent for their sins and they beg God to save them. And sure enough, God saves them again and again. And then they give thanks to God for saving them. And then sure enough, the very next page, they're worshiping false idols again, or, you know, murdering children, or whatever, all the horrible things that are in this chapter. Now, the reason I think this is very important for us to look at right now is because, well, a couple things. The book of Judges includes the story of Samson. So Samson is one of the ancient Israelite, well, kings or judges, who I believe he ruled for about 20 years or so. And he's the one who's famous for bringing down the temple and killing thousands of people as they were trying to kill him. He committed suicide, but brought down, well, it wasn't just a temple. It was an arena. It was an event viewing location, like a stadium, you could say. He brought down this small stadium by destroying the support pillars. And he was a very strong man, extremely strong. And he had demonstrated great feats of strength, but he had also turned to a lot of evil, and he had been imprisoned, and his eyes had been plucked out, I believe. He was blinded. Anyway, his last act was to commit mass suicide and to kill hundreds of other people with him, if not thousands. I think the number was something like 3,000. And those were the Philistines that he killed. So this action is even referred to today in terms of modern Israel. It's called the Samson option. And in modern day geopolitics, Israel possesses a large supply of illegal nuclear weapons, which were provided by the United States of America, but Israel's possession of these weapons is not acknowledged officially by the United States because it violates the exporting of nuclear weapons to Israel violates U.S. law. So if it were officially acknowledged, then somebody would have to be prosecuted and go to jail because it would violate nuclear non-proliferation treaties that are in existence. And also, the United States has laws that prevent it from exporting weapons of war to countries that are engaged in violations of humanitarian principles. So that could also become an issue if that were known. But the point is that Israel possesses these nuclear weapons. And it is said in the modern day that if Israel were suffering an existential threat, and if it thought that it was going to be, let's say, completely overrun and destroyed by invading armies, I mean, who knows, maybe the Turks at some point. I mean, this is not a prediction. I'm just saying the Samson option describes Israel's ability to launch nuclear weapons and kill millions of people in surrounding cities and surrounding nations, even as Israel itself is overrun and destroyed. That's called the Samson option, and that refers to the judge, Samson, that's mentioned in the book of Judges. So understand that there are multiple layers of metaphors at work here, because Samson had become, incredibly evil at one point, but when he was imprisoned, he rediscovered his relationship with God, and he rededicated himself to God, and he got his God's strength back, which he had lost previously. And this may be some of what's happening with Israel today, where Israel, under its current leadership, Netanyahu, is engaged in some very evil, sinister acts, which are very similar to what's described in the later chapters of Judges, by the way. And yet, maybe Israel will turn back to God like Samson did and beg God for forgiveness. But if it doesn't, then Israel is on a path right now in the modern day. It's suffering economic destruction because of the war and the fact that its ports are not functioning because of the Red Sea, the threat by the Yemeni military against the ships in the Red Sea. And so investors and manufacturing companies, even Intel, microchips, they're all pulling out of Israel. Tourism has collapsed. The hotel industry obviously has collapsed. And even Israel's credit rating is being downgraded by companies like Fitch. So Israel is suffering an economic collapse that is truly biblical. And this follows Israel's leadership and their turn to evil to carry out genocide and destruction of the Palestinian children and women. And so, again, this is very, very similar to Judges, chapter 20 also, and chapter 19. And I'm going to read for you a little bit of that so that you get an idea of what I'm talking about. But, this is an ancient cycle of evil and then economic destruction, or having your city burned down, and then repentance, begging God for forgiveness, and then being forgiven by God, and then restoring abundance and having a very successful nation. And then people get apathetic and everything's too easy and they have too much in terms of riches and so on. And then they turn against God again and they all become perverted. And, pretty soon it's all transgenderism and gay sex parties. And then guess what? The whole cycle repeats itself as your economy collapses and crime goes crazy. And so my point is that This isn't even about Israel, actually, this sermon. This is about the United States, that the United States of America is following this path that is described in the book of Judges, a path of destruction that was kind of a curse for many of these various so-called judges or kings or tribal leaders in ancient Israel. And they're covered in this book, Judges, Ehud, Gideon, and Samson, and some others. So I'd like to read a few passages for you, just with the warning that some of this gets quite graphic. There are some horrific things that happen, and these are included in the book of Judges, because, well, this is a warning for humanity. This is a warning. Don't go down this path of lawlessness and LGBT themes. Don't be preoccupied with sex and sodomy and just mass fornication and pedophilia and child trafficking and violence and war. If you're obsessed with these things, your civilization will be destroyed. And what are we seeing in America today? We're seeing our civilization destroyed. It is crumbling, just like ancient Israel or just like ancient Jerusalem. And when we read some of this from the book of Judges, you'll see what I mean. I just want to warn you, this is somewhat graphic, even in the Old Testament language here, or the New King James Version translation is what I'm reading. So Judges chapter 19. Where's the verse? Here it is, verse 22. As they were enjoying themselves, suddenly certain men of the city, perverted men, and by the way, they're talking about gay sex guys, okay, like gay sex predators. You'll find out. Surrounded the house and beat on the door. They spoke to the master of the house, the old man, saying, "Bring out the man who came to your house, that we may know him carnally." See, they wanted, these men wanted to rape and sodomize this man in the house. Verse 23, but the man, the master of the house, went out to them and said to them, "No, not my brethren. I beg you, do not act so wickedly. Seeing this man has come into my house, do not commit this outrage." And then, verse 24, he does something that many of us would consider quite shocking. Verse 24, "Look, here is my virgin daughter and the man's concubine. Let me bring them out now. Humble them and do with them as you please," he says. "But to this man, do not do such a vile thing." He's basically saying, here, you can rape my virgin daughter and the man's concubine, but just don't rape the man. Like, this is how graphic and crazy this gets. Now, doesn't this sound like drag queen story time in a liberal city in America today? Yes, it does. Very similar. Verse 25, but the men would not heed him. So the man took his concubine and brought her out to them, and they knew her and abused her all night until morning. In other words, they sexually assaulted her and raped her and so on. And when the day began to break, they let her go. So why would the man of the house even agree to this? Because he had no other choice. Because the perverted, you know, rapey men who were beating on the door, there was no other way to make them go away. They were vile and violent, or threatening to be violent, and they were demanding these things. So verse 26, then the woman came as the day was dawning and fell at the door of the man's house where her master was till it was light. When her master arose in the morning and opened the doors of the house and went out to go his way, there was his concubine fallen at the door of the house with her hands on the threshold. And he said to her, "Get up and let us be going." But there was no answer. She had been raped to death by these perverted men because, again, this is a lawless country at this point, a lawless place. And this is what the ancient Israelites did over and over and over again. This is one of the many times they broke their covenant with God, by the way. So the man lifted her onto the donkey, and the man got up and went to his place. When he entered his house, and I'm just warning you, this is graphic, okay, if you've never read this part before. He took his knife, laid hold of his concubine, and divided her into 12 pieces, limb by limb, and sent her throughout all the territory of Israel. Special package delivery. Yeah, here's an arm, you know, here's a leg. Oh my God. And so it was that all who saw it said, "No such deed has been done or seen from the day that the children of Israel came up from the land of Egypt until this day." In other words, they were outraged. Consider it, confer, and speak up. The people are outraged, absolutely outraged. And then Judges chapter 20 says, "So all the children of Israel came out from Dan to Beersheba," that's how you pronounce it, "as well as from the land of Gilead, and the congregation gathered together as one man before the Lord at Mizpah." And again, I apologize if my pronunciations of these names are not correct or traditional. I'm doing the best I can, given the language here. And sometimes I disagree with mainstream pronunciations. Verse 2, "And the leaders of all the people, all the tribes of Israel, presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 foot soldiers who drew the sword." 400,000 soldiers. "Now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel had gone up to Mizpah. Then the children of Israel said, 'Tell us, how did this wicked deed happen?'" So you can see, right, the community is getting extremely angry at the fact that this woman was raped to death. I don't know why Gibeah, who is the husband, decided that he was going to chop her into 12 pieces, but he tries to explain it in verse 4. So the husband of the murdered woman, he tries to answer that question here about why he chopped this woman into 12 pieces. So this is verse 4 of chapter 20. "So the Levite, the husband of the woman who was murdered, answered and said, 'My concubine and I went into Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin, to spend the night. And the men of Gibeah rose against me and surrounded the house at night because of me. They intended to kill me, but instead they ravished my concubine so that she died. So I took hold of my concubine, cut her in pieces, and sent her throughout all the territory of the inheritance of Israel, because they committed lewdness and outrage in Israel. Look, all of you are children of Israel. Give your advice and counsel here and now." So he chopped her up and sent her out in order to raise awareness and outrage about the act that had happened. Okay. Verse 8, "So all the people arose as one man, saying, 'None of us will go to his tent, nor will any turn back to his house. But now this is the thing which we will do to Gibeah. We will go up against it by lot,'" meaning we will decimate the people of Gibeah. And they talk about that. "We will take 10 men out of every 100, and we'll take 1,000 out of every 10,000, and so on, that when they come to Gibeah in Benjamin, they may repay all the vileness that they have done in Israel. So all the men of Israel were gathered around the city, united together as one man." Now, guess what happens next? So the men of Israel demand the rounding up and mass murder of all the perverts in the tribe of Benjamin. Okay? This is all in the Bible. I'm not making this up. Okay. Verse 12. "Then the tribes of Israel sent men through all the tribe of Benjamin, saying, 'What is this wickedness that has occurred among you? Now, therefore, deliver up the men, the perverted men who are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death, and remove the evil from Israel.'" You see? They're like, "You got to let us kill the perverts and the rapists and all the evil people," right? "But the children of Benjamin would not listen to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. Instead, the children of Benjamin," this means the citizens of Benjamin, "gathered together from their cities to Gibeah to go to battle against the children of Israel." So now we have a war here. We have like a tribe-on-tribe war. "And from their cities at that time, the children of Benjamin numbered 26,000 6,000 men who drew the sword, besides the inhabitants of Gibeah, who numbered 700 select men. So here we have 26,700 men. Verse 16, among all this people were 700 select men who were left-handed. Every one could sling a stone at a hair's breadth and not miss. Now, you may wonder, why were they left-handed? What does left-handedness have to do with the sling? Well, when you're in ancient battle formations with swords and shields, you have to be right-handed because you're working with other right-handed people. And the way that the shields hold up, you have to be right-handed. Your sword goes in your right hand, your shield goes in your left hand, okay? So if you can't work your sword with your right hand, then you can't be part of that sword shield group. So then they made you into a sling thrower. So that's what this is saying. So they had, 700 left-handed sling throwers. Now, besides Benjamin, the men of Israel numbered 400,000 men who drew the sword. All of these were men of war. So you can see this is shaping up to be a massive war that began with basically gay perverts wanting to, you know, anally rape a man. And now it has escalated into this. Then the children of Israel arose and went up to the house of God to inquire of God. They said, which of us shall go up first to battle against the children of Benjamin? The Lord said, Judah first. Send Judah. So this battle takes place, and for the first couple of days, Israel loses something like 25,000 men per day. And then I think on the third day or so, they figure out that they're going to lead the men of Benjamin out of their defensive configuration and set an ambush for them. And in fact, they do that. They set the ambush, and then the soldiers of Israel utterly decimate and defeat the soldiers of Benjamin. Now, once they defeated all of the soldiers of Benjamin, then the men of Israel, the soldiers of Israel, they rushed into the city of Gibeah. And here we get to verse 37. And the men in ambush quickly rushed upon Gibeah. The men in ambush spread out and struck the whole city with the edge of the sword. Now, the appointed signal between the men of Israel and the men in ambush was that they would make a great cloud of smoke rise up from the city, whereupon the men of Israel would turn in battle. Now, Benjamin had begun to strike and kill about 30 of the men of Israel, for they said, surely they are defeated before us, as in the first battle. But when the cloud began to rise from the city in a column of smoke, the Benjamites looked behind them, and there was the whole city going up in smoke to heaven. And when the men of Israel turned back, the men of Benjamin panicked, for they saw that disaster had come upon them. Therefore, they turned their backs before the men of Israel in the direction of the wilderness. In other words, they fled. They fled into the forest or the wilderness. But before battle overtook them, and whoever came out of the cities, they destroyed in their midst. They surrounded the Benjamites, chased them, and easily trampled them down as far as the front of Gibeah toward the east. And 18,000 men of Benjamin fell, and these were men of valor. Then they turned and fled toward the wilderness to the rock of Rimmon. And they cut down 5,000 of them on the highways and so on and so forth. And then this chapter ends with the following, verse 48. And the men of Israel turned back against the children of Benjamin and struck them down with the edge of the sword. From every city, men and beasts, all who were found, they also set fire to all the cities they came to. Now, in this case, I think the word children means children, because they slayed everything. It says all who were found. So this was an ethnic cleansing of Benjamin and all those who were part of the tribe of Benjamin. Because Benjamin was a city that was producing these predatory, rapists and perverts, violent sex offenders, basically, which led to this entire conflict. Now, the ethnic cleansing continues because, of course, there was a lot of anger, a lot of wrath in those days. And again, they did not have King David yet. They did not have a leader who could bring them together and enforce some rule of law. It was a lawless time, a lawless land. And so everybody was just doing whatever. I mean, they had the judges, kind of the chieftains, but they were out of control. And in fact, in chapter 21 of Judges, I'm going to skip around a little bit here, but essentially the people built an altar and they said, well, this one tribe hasn't shown up. Verse 8, what one is there from the tribes of Israel who did not come up to Mizpah to the Lord? And no one had come up to the camp from Jabesh Gilead to the assembly. So the congregation sent out there 12,000 of their most valiant men and commanded them, saying, go and strike the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead with the edge of the sword, including the women and children. And this is the thing that you shall do. You shall utterly destroy every male and every woman who has known a man intimately. In other words, kill all the women except the virgins, is what they're saying. So they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead 400 young virgins who had not known a man intimately, and they brought them to the camp at Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan. So they arranged for the men to basically capture young wives, the young women of Shiloh, to be caught while they were dancing as part of their yearly feast festival. And this is like child trafficking, essentially. And then verse 23, and the children of Benjamin did so, talking about the men of Benjamin, they took enough wives for their number from those who danced, whom they caught. Then they went and returned to their inheritance, and they rebuilt the cities and dwelt in them. So the children of Israel departed from there at that time, every man to his tribe and family. They went out from there, every man to his inheritance. And then verse 25, which I began with, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And I've intentionally covered really the last chapters of the book of Judges, because these contain, I think, the most important parts, showing that without the rule of law, without an overriding system of morality and ethics, then your civilization, whether it's a city, a tribe, a nation, an empire, your civilization will eventually turn to evil. People will become perverted. You'll have LGBT themes rising up. The children will be trafficked. They'll be raped. The men will be raped by other men. You know, you'll have men and women's restrooms like we have in society today. It's all going to get super perverted, incredibly wicked and evil. And don't forget also at this time that many of the people were offering up their children as sacrifices to Moloch. So they were killing their children as a sacrifice. It was a form of, you know, post-birth abortion in those days. And that's on top of all of the rape and war and ethnic cleansing that was going on. But what this book reminds us is that this same fate awaits America, because America is going down the same path. And so is Canada, so is the UK, all of Western civilization, Australia, even New Zealand, it's all going down the same path. It's a path of lawlessness, defunding police, letting violent criminals onto the streets. It's a path of mass fornication without consequence. It's a path of mass abortions, of essentially child sacrifice. It's a path of a loss of rationality and reason, of violence and crime, lawlessness galore. And when this happens, your nation shall fall. And then at some point, the nation will beg God for forgiveness. We are not yet at that point in America. There's a lot more falling yet to come. A lot more sin will yet emerge. But the outcome of this is not in doubt. The United States of America and Western civilization as we know it will be destroyed. Well, it's destroying itself. So it will implode. And there will be mass suffering and mass death. This will be a horrific fall from grace because America turned from God. America turned from God and became worshipers of abortion, worshipers of illegality, violent crime, illegal aliens crossing the border. America has turned to lawlessness and deception, fake news in the media, fake propaganda, just lying. The government constantly lies about all the statistics. Oh, there's no inflation. Oh, jobs growth was amazing. Yeah, yeah, but it's all just lies. And then, of course, the government is involved in war, because war becomes the refuge of the deceivers who want to distract their own people with conflict and death. So they start wars, they provoke wars, and then that's where we are right now. That's what we're seeing. And only by the grace of God shall we avoid escalation of these current wars involving, you know, Ukraine and Russia, Israel versus Iran, potentially, and Taiwan versus China. And there are other possible wars as well. But this is the path that America is on. If we do not change our direction, if we do not repent for the sins of our nation, if we do not turn back to God and ask for his forgiveness, then our nation shall be decimated, just like Benjamin. It shall be utterly decimated. The economy will be decimated. The people will be destroyed. All the gifts of civilization will vanish. And the land that was once known as America will become desolate. This is the outcome that awaits America if the nation does not turn away from Satanism and embrace God in the lives of the people. And remember that LGBT themes are also anti-family. So it's all about destroying the family, destroying the ability to reproduce, eliminating reason and rationality, perversion, child grooming, and pedophilia. Many of the transgender members, especially in the LGBT groups, they are pedophiles. And these are the kind of people that are, in essence, mentioned in the book of Judges, the kind of people that the Israelites went and demanded to be killed from Benjamin, from the tribe of Benjamin. And were the Israelites actually carried that out. And they did. They murdered them all. And then they also went and killed the people of Jabesh Gilead as well, killed all those people. So this is the kind of thing that repeats one way or another throughout history, these cycles of perversion, collapse, Satanism, evil, and then war. And along with war comes pestilence and famine. And that's going to happen as well. Count on it. For the United States of America and Western civilization today, we are about to be plunged into a cycle of war, famine, and pestilence that is a result of all of the pedophilia, child grooming, the drag queen story time, the whole LGBT takeover of society, which destroys the viability of your civilization. These all go hand in hand. You cannot have a sustainable civilization when LGBT is in charge of everything and all your rulers are LGBT people. And you have all transgenders in the government ruling over you like tyrannical authoritarians while in their own private bedrooms, you know, they're grooming children or they're pedophiles or traffickers or, you know, sodomizers or whatever they're doing to each other. These are all signs of the end of civilization. And that's exactly where we are going in our civilization today. When you see the LGBT rainbow flags put up in a city or a corporate logo or wherever, those are signs of the collapse of your civilization. That's what that means. And the LGBT flag has perverted the rainbow, which is originally the sign of God and his blessings. It has been perverted and hijacked by Satanism to claim domain over Earth with the LGBT flag. So everywhere they put up those flags means they are destroying your civilization and claiming domain in the name of Satanism. That's what the LGBT flag means. And in those cities, when they paint the LGBT flags on the crosswalks and the streets, they are claiming satanic control over the infrastructure of the city. They are claiming those cities for Satan. You'll be able to even see it from satellite. You can see the giant satanic flags painted on the roads from satellite. You think God doesn't see that? He does. So those cities shall be judged harshly when God's wrath is fully experienced. And yes, that day is coming. Lastly, I would point out that the LGBT movement openly endorses the mutilation of children, which, of course, is a satanic ritualistic practice that was also carried out in the Old Testament. The sacrificing of children, the mutilation of children. Obviously, God frowned upon that, and God punished those societies that engaged in that kind of activity. In the eyes of God, and I would say in most normal people, mutilating children is very evil. It's incredibly sinister. It's more sinister than, you know, just mutilating, I guess, consenting adults. I mean, tricking children into having their organs cut off, to slice off their reproductive organs before they are even of the age of consent, is a special kind of spiritual crime against children. And that's what's being carried out in the LGBT community every single day in America, in the UK, and other Western nations. That kind of thing does not happen in Russia or China or Turkey or Iran. You know, I'm talking about Western nations that are going to be brought to their knees as the wrath of God is unleashed against them. So it's mutilating children, it's trafficking children, it is aborting babies, and all of this has been done before. It's in the book of Judges, it's in other books in the Bible as well, and every time it happened, that civilization collapsed. So do not be surprised at what's happening today with the collapse of our Western civilization, because it is spiritual cause and effect. And I hope you'll join me in embracing a return to the teachings of Christ, a return to inviting God into our lives. And it may be too late for this current nation, but it's never too late for humanity and whatever comes next. It's never too late to embrace the teachings of Christ and to invite God back into your life. It's never too late. And indeed, there will be a new civilization that rises out of the ashes of this current one after its collapse. And in that new civilization, we the people shall demand obedience to God, because it's only from that that we will experience his blessings and actually rebuild society and human civilization and rebuild abundance and joy, health, and happiness, and take back the future of our world from those satanic, demonic forces that have desperately tried to destroy it. They will burn in hell, but we will live in God's presence with heaven on earth as we embrace God and reject the sinister presence of satanic forces that rule the world of LGBT and child mutilations and child trafficking. We reject that, we're going to be okay. So pray to God today. Pray for those children. Pray for them to be spared. Pray for the wisdom of humanity to be awakened. And pray for mercy from God for our nation, if it is even possible, so that he may not totally destroy this world in his wrath and in his judgment against those who have repeatedly sinned against him. And just possibly, we'll all make it through this. But that's my sermon for today. I know it's hard-hitting. This is not fun and games today. These are serious topics. These are serious times. And everything is at stake here for eternity. Your soul is at stake. Make the right choices in alignment with God, and you will thank yourself literally for eternity. God bless you all. I'm Mike Adams. Check out more of our sermons at abundance.church. Take care.